He dreamed he was a contestant on Jeopardy. Not the new Big Money version, but the original daytime show. Instead of computer screens, a stagehand behind the game board simply pulled up a card when a contestant called for a particular answer. Alex Trebek had been replaced by Art Fleming with his slick back hair and somehow prissy poor boy at the party smile. The woman in the middle was still Mildred, and she still had a satellite downlink in her ear, but her hair was teased up into a Jacqueline Kennedy bouffant, and her wire-rimmed glasses had been replaced by a pair of cat's-eye frames. And everyone was in black and white, him included. "Okay, Howard," Art said and pointed at him. His index finger was a grotesque thing, easily a foot long. It stuck out of his loosely curled fist like a pedagogue's pointer. There was dried toothpaste on the nail. "It's your turn to select." Howard looked at the board and said, "I'd like pass some Vipers for 100, Art." The square with $100 on it was removed, revealing an answer which Art now read. "The best way to get rid of those troublesome fingers in your bathroom drain." "What is..." Howard said, and then came up blank. A black-and-white studio audience stared silently at him. A black-and-white cameraman dollied in for a close-up of his sweat-streaked black-and-white face. "What is, "Hurry up, Howard, you're almost out of time," Art Fleming cajoled, waving his grotesquely elongated finger at Howard. But Howard was a total blank. He was going to miss the question, the $100 would be deducted from his score, he was going to go into the minus column, he was going to be a complete loser. They probably wouldn't even give him the lousy set of the Grow Your Encyclopedia. A delivery truck on the street below backfired loudly. Howard sat up with a jerk, which almost pitched him out of his chair. "What is liquid drain cleaner?" he screamed. "What is liquid drain cleaner?" It was, of course, the answer. The correct answer. He began to laugh. He was still laughing 5 minutes later as he shrugged into his topcoat and stepped out the door. Howard picked up the plastic bottle the toothpick-chewing clerk in the Queens Boulevard Happy Handyman hardware store had just set down on the counter. There was a cartoon woman in an apron on the front. She stood with one hand on her hip while she used the other hand to pour a gush of drain cleaner into something that was either an industrial sink or Orson Welles' bidet. "Drainies," the label proclaimed. "Twice the strength of most leading brands. Opens bathroom sinks, showers, and drains in minutes. Dissolves hair and organic matter." "Organic matter," Howard said. "Just what does that mean?" The clerk, a bald man with a lot of warts on his forehead, shrugged. The toothpick poking out between his lips rolled from one side of his mouth to the other.
"Food, I guess. But I wouldn't stand the bottle next to the liquid soap, if you know what I mean."
"Would it eat holes in your hands?" Howard asked, hoping he sounded properly horrified. The clerk shrugged again.
"I guess it ain't as powerful as the stuff we used to sell, the stuff with the lye in it. But that stuff ain't legal anymore, at least I don't think it is. But you see that, don't you?"
He tapped the Skull and Crossbones Poison logo with one short, stubby finger. Howard got a good look at that finger. He had found himself noticing a lot of fingers on his walk down to the Happy Handyman. "Yes," Howard said. "I see it."
"Well, they don't put that on just 'cause it looks, you know, sporty. If you got kids, keep it out of their reach, and don't goggle with it."
He burst out laughing, the toothpick riding up and down on his lower lip. "I won't," Howard said. He turned the bottle and read the fine print. "Contains sodium hydroxide and potassium hydroxide. Causes severe burns on contact." Well, that was pretty good. He didn't know if it was good enough, but there was a way to find out, wasn't there? The voice in his head spoke up dubiously. "What if you only make it mad, Howard? What then?" "Well, so what? It was in the drain, wasn't it?" "Yes, but it appears to be growing. Still, what choice did he have?" On this subject, the little voice was silent.
"I hate to hurry you over such an important purchase," the clerk said, "but I'm by myself this morning, and I have some invoices to go over, so I'll take it,"
Howard said, reaching for his wallet. As he did so, his eye caught something else, a display below a sign which read, "Fall Clearance Sale." "What are those?" he asked. "Over there."
"Those?" the clerk asked. "Electric hedge clippers. We got 2 dozen of them last June, but they didn't move worth a damn."
"I'll take a pair," said Howard Mittler. He began to smile, and the clerk later told police he didn't like that smile, not one little bit. Howard put his new purchases on the kitchen counter when he got home, pushing the box containing the electric hedge clippers over to one side, hoping it would not come to those. Surely it wouldn't. Then he carefully read the instructions on the bottle of Drainies. Slowly pour one quarter of the bottle into drain. Let stand 15 minutes. Repeat application if necessary. But surely it wouldn't come to that, either, would it? To make sure it wouldn't, Howard decided he would pour half the bottle into the drain, maybe a little bit more. He struggled with the safety cap and finally managed to get it off. He then walked through the living room and into the hall with the white plastic bottle held out in front of him and a grim expression, the expression of a soldier who knows he will be ordered over the top of the trench at any moment, on his usually mild face. "Wait a minute," the voice in his head cried out as he reached for the doorknob, and his hand faltered. "This is crazy. You know it's crazy. You don't need drain cleaner. You need a psychiatrist. You need to lie down on a couch somewhere and tell someone you imagine. That's right, that's the word, imagine. There's a finger stuck in the bathroom sink, a finger that's growing." "Oh, no," Howard said, shaking his head firmly back and forth. "No way." He could not, absolutely could not, visualize himself telling this story to a psychiatrist, to anyone, in fact. Suppose Mr. Lathrop got wind of it. He might, too, through Vi's father. Bill DeHorn had been a CPA in the firm of Dean, Green, and Lathrop for 30 years. He had gotten Howard his initial interview with Mr. Lathrop, had written him a glowing recommendation, had in fact done everything but give him the job himself. Mr. DeHorn was retired now, but he and John Lathrop still saw a lot of each other. If Vi found out her Howie was going to see a shrink, and how could he keep it from her, a thing like that? She would tell her mother. Vi told her mother everything. Mrs. DeHorn would tell her husband, of course, and Mr. DeHorn. Howard found himself imagining the two men, his father-in-law and his boss, sitting in leather wingback chairs in some mythic club or other, the kind of wingback chairs that were studded with little gold nail heads. He saw them sipping sherry in this vision. The cut glass decanter stood on the little table by Mr. Lathrop's right hand. Howard had never seen either man actually drink sherry, but this morbid fantasy seemed to demand it. He saw Mr. DeHorn, who was now doddering into his late 70s and had all the discretion of a housefly, lean confidentially forward and say, "You'll never believe what my son-in-law Howard's up to, John. He's going to see a psychiatrist. He thinks there's a finger in his bathroom sink, you see. Do you suppose he might be taking drugs of some sort?" And maybe Howard didn't really think all that would happen. He thought there was a possibility it might. If not in just that way, then in some other. But suppose it didn't. He still couldn't see himself going to a psychiatrist. Something in him, a close neighbor of that something that would not allow him to urinate in a public bathroom if there was a line of men behind him, no doubt, simply refused the idea. He would not get on one of those couches and supply the answer, "There's a finger sticking out of the bathroom sink," so that some goatee-wearing head shrinker could pelt him with questions. It would be like Jeopardy in hell. He reached for the knob again. "Call a plumber, then," the voice yelled desperately. "At least do that much. You don't have to tell him what you see. Just tell him the pipe's clogged, or tell him your wife lost her wedding ring down the drain. Tell him anything." But that idea was, in a way, even more useless than the idea of calling a shrink. This was New York, not Des Moines. You could lose the Hope Diamond down your bathroom sink and still wait a week for a plumber to make a house call. He did not intend to spend the next 7 days slinking around Queens looking for gas stations where an intendant would accept $5 for the privilege of allowing Howard Mitla to move his bowels in a dirty men's room underneath this year's Bar Doll calendar. "Then do it fast," the voice said, giving up. "At least do it fast." On this, Howard's two minds were united. He was, in truth, afraid that if he didn't act fast and keep on acting, he would not act at all. "And surprise it if you can. Take off your shoes." Howard thought this was an extremely useful idea. He acted upon it at once, easing off first one loafer and then the other. He found himself wishing he had thought to put on some rubber gloves in case of backsplatter, and wondered if Vi still kept a pair under the kitchen sink. Never mind, though. He was screwed up to the sticking point. If he paused to go back for the rubber gloves now, he might lose his courage. Maybe temporarily. Maybe for good. He eased open the bathroom door and slipped inside. The Mitla bathroom was never what one would call a cheery place, but at this time of day, almost noon, it was at least fairly bright. Visibility wouldn't be a problem. And there was no sign of the finger. At least, not yet. Howard tiptoed across the room with a bottle of drain cleaner clutched tightly in his right hand. He bent over the sink and looked into the round black hole in the center of the faded pink porcelain. Except it wasn't dark.
Something was rushing up through that blackness, hurrying up that small bore oozy pipe to greet him, to greet its good friend, Howard Mitla. "Take this!" Howard screamed and tilted the bottle of Drainese over the sink. Greenish-blue sludge spilled out and struck the drain just as the finger emerged. The result was immediate and terrifying. The glop coated the nail and the tip of the finger. It went into a frenzy, whirling like a dervish around and around the limited circumference of the drain, spraying off small blue-green fans of Drainese. Several droplets struck the light blue cotton shirt Howard was wearing and immediately ate holes in it. These holes fizzed brown lace at the edges, but the shirt was rather too large for him, and none of the stuff got through to his chest or belly. Other drops stippled the skin of his right wrist and palm, but he did not feel these until later. His adrenaline was not just flowing. It was at flood tide. The finger blurted up from the drain, joint after impossible joint of it. It was now smoking, and it smelled like a rubber boot sizzling on a hot barbecue grill. "Take this! Lunch is served, you bastard!" Howard screamed, continuing to pour as the finger rose to a height of just over a foot, rising out of the drain like a cobra from a snake charmer's basket. It had almost reached the mouth of the plastic bottle when it wavered, seemed to shudder, and suddenly reversed its field, zipping back down the drain. Howard leaned farther over the basin to watch it go, and saw just a retreating flash of white far down in the dark. Lazy tendrils of smoke drifted up. He drew a deep breath, and this was a mistake. He inhaled a great double lungful of Drainese fumes. He was suddenly, violently sick. He vomited forcefully into the basin and then staggered away, still gagging and trying to retch. "I did it!" he shouted deliriously. His head swam with the combined stench of corrosive chemicals and burned flesh. Still, he felt almost exalted. He had met the enemy, and the enemy, by God and all the saints, was his! His! Hidey-ho! Hidey-fucking-ho! I did it! I... His gorge rose again. He half-knelt, half-swooned in front of the toilet, the bottle of Drainese still held stiffly out in his right hand, and realized too late that Vi had put both the ring and the lid down this morning when she vacated the throne. He vomited all over the fuzzy pink toilet seat cover, and then fell forward into his own gloop in a dead faint. He could not have been unconscious for long, because the bathroom enjoyed full daylight for less than half an hour, even in the middle of summer. Then the other buildings cut off the direct sunlight and plunged the room into gloom again. Howard raised his head slowly, aware he was coated from hairline to chinline with sticky, foul-smelling stuff. He was even more aware of something else, a clittering sound. It was coming from behind him, and it was getting closer. He turned his head, which felt like an overfilled sandbag, slowly to his left. His eyes slowly widened. He hitched in breath and tried to scream, but his throat locked. The finger was coming for him. It was easily 7 feet long now and getting longer all the time. It curved out of the sink in a stiff arc made by perhaps a dozen knuckles, descended to the floor, then curved again. Double-jointed, some distant commentator in his disintegrating mind reported with interest. Now it was tapping and feeling its way across the tile floor toward him. The last 9 or 10 inches were discolored and smoking. The nail had turned a greenish-black color. Howard thought he could see the whitish shine of bone just below the first of its knuckles. It was quite badly burned, but it was not by any stretch of the imagination dissolved. "Get away," Howard whispered, and for a moment the entire grotesque jointed contraption came to a halt. It looked like a lunatic's conception of a New Year's Eve party favor. Then it slithered straight toward him. The last half a dozen knuckles flexed, and the tip of the finger wrapped itself around Howard Mitla's ankle. "No!" he screamed as the smoking hydroxide twins, sodium and potassium, ate through his nylon sock and sizzled his skin. He gave his foot a tremendous yank. For a moment, the finger held. It was very strong. And then he pulled free. He crawled in towards the door with a huge clump of vomit-loaded hair hanging in his eyes. As he crawled, he tried to look back over his shoulder, but he could see nothing through his coagulated hair. Now his chest had unlocked, and he gave voice to a series of barking, frightful screams. He could not see the finger, at least temporarily, but he could hear the finger, and now it was coming fast, tick, 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 right behind him. Still trying to look back over his shoulder, he ran into the wall to the left of the bathroom door with his shoulder. The towels fell off the shelf again. He went sprawling, and at once the finger was around his other ankle, flexing tight with its charred and burning tip. It began to pull him back toward the sink. It actually began to pull him back. Howard uttered a deep and primitive howl, a sound such had never before escaped his polite set of CPA vocal cords, and flailed at the edge of the door. He caught it with his right hand and gave a huge, panicky yank. His shirt tail pulled free all the way around, and the seam under his right arm tore loose with a low, purring sound. But he managed to get free, losing only the ragged lower half of one sock. He stumbled to his feet, turned, and saw the finger feeling its way toward him again. The nail at the end was now deeply split and bleeding. "Need a manicure, bud?" Howard thought, and uttered an anguished laugh. Then he ran for the kitchen. Someone was pounding on the door, hard. "Mitla! Hey, Mitla! What's going on in there?" Feeney from down the hall, a big, loud Irish drunk. Correction, a big, loud, nosy Irish drunk. "Nothing I can't handle, my bog-trotting friend," Howard shouted as he went into the kitchen. He laughed again and tossed his hair off his forehead. It went, but fell back in exactly the same jellied clump a second later. "Nothing I can't handle, and you better believe that. You can take that right to the bank and put it in your now account." "What did you call me?" Feeney responded. His voice, which had been truculent, now became ominous as well. "Shut up!" Howard yelled. "I'm busy!" "I want the yelling to stop or I'm calling the cops." "Fuck off!" Howard screamed at him. Another first. He tossed his hair off his forehead and clump, back down it fell. "I don't have to listen to your shit, you little four-eyes creep." Howard raked his hands through his vomit-loaded hair and then flung them out in front of him in a curiously Gallic gesture. "Et voila," it seemed to say. Warm juice and shapeless gobbets splattered across Vi's white kitchen cabinets. Howard didn't even notice. The hideous finger had seized each of his ankles once, and they burned as if they were wearing circlets of fire. Howard didn't care about that, either. He seized the box containing the electric hedge clippers. On the front, a smiling dad with a pipe parked in his gob was trimming the hedge in front of an estate-sized home. "You having a little drug party in there?" Feeney inquired from the hall. "You better get out of here, Feeney, or I'll introduce you to a friend of mine," Howard yelled back. This struck him as incredibly witty. He threw his head back and yodeled at the kitchen ceiling, his hair standing up in strange jags and quills and glistening with stomach juices. He looked like a man who has embarked on a violent love affair with a tube of Brill Cream. "Okay, that's it," Feeney said. "That's it. I'm calling the cops." Howard barely heard him. Dennis Feeney would have to wait. He had bigger fish to fry. He had ripped the electric hedge clippers from the box, examined them feverishly, saw the battery compartment, and pried it open. "C-cells," he muttered, laughing. "Good, that's good. No problem there." He yanked open one of the drawers to the left of the sink, pulling with such force that the stop broke off, and the drawer flew all the way across the kitchen, striking the stove and landing upside down on the linoleum floor with a bang and a clatter. Amid the general rickrack, tongs, peelers, graters, paring knives, and garbage bag ties, was a small treasure trove of batteries, mostly C-cells and square 9 volts. Still laughing, it seemed he could no longer stop laughing, Howard fell on his knees and grubbed through the litter. He succeeded in cutting the pad of his right palm quite badly on the blade of a paring knife before seizing two of the C-cells, but he felt this no more than he had felt the burns he had sustained when he had been backsplashed. Now that Feeney had at last shut his braying Irish donkey's mouth, Howard could hear the tapping again. Not coming from the sink now, though. Uh-uh, no way. The ragged nail was tapping on the bathroom door. Or maybe the hall floor. He had neglected to close the door, he now remembered. "Who gives a fuck?" Howard asked. And then he screamed, "Who gives a fuck?" I said. "I'm ready for you, my friend. I'm coming to kick ass and chew bubblegum, and I'm all out of bubblegum. You'll wish you'd stayed down the drain." He slammed the batteries into the compartment set into the handle of the hedge clippers and tried the power switch. Nothing. "Bite my crank," Howard muttered. He pulled one of the batteries out, reversed it, and put it back in. This time, the blades buzzed to life when he pushed the switch, snicking back and forth so rapidly they were only a blur. He started for the kitchen door, then made himself switch the gadget off and go back to the counter. He didn't want to waste time putting the battery cover back in place, not when he was primed for battle, but the last bit of sanity still flickering in his mind assured him that he had no choice. If his hand slipped while he was dealing with the thing, the batteries might pop out of the open compartment. And then where would he be? Why, facing the James gang with an unloaded gun, of course.
So he fiddled the battery cover back on, cursing when it wouldn't fit, and turning it in the other direction. "You wait for me now," he called back over his shoulder. "I'm coming. We're not done yet." At last, the battery cover snapped down. Howard strode briskly back through the living room with the hedge clippers held at port arms. His hair still stood up in punk rock quills and spikes. His shirt, now torn out under one arm and burned in several places, flapped against his round, tidy stomach. His bare feet slapped on the linoleum. The tattered remains of his nylon socks swung and dangled about his ankles. Feeney yelled through the door, "I called them, Birdbrain, you got that? I called the cops, and I hope the ones who show up are all bog-trotting Irishmen, just like me." "Blow it out your old tan tailpipe," Howard said. But he was really paying no attention to Feeney. Dennis Feeney was in another universe. This was just his quacking, unimportant voice coming in over the sub-etheric. Howard stood to one side of the bathroom door, looking like a cop in a TV show. Only someone had handed him the wrong prop, and he was packing a hedge clipper instead of a .38. He pressed his thumb firmly on the power button set high on the handle of the hedge clippers. He took a deep breath, and the voice of sanity, now down to a mere gleam, offered a final thought before packing up for good. "Are you sure you want to trust your life to a pair of electric hedge clippers you bought on sale?" "I have no choice," Howard muttered, smiling tightly, and lunged inside. The finger was still there, still arced out of the sink in that stiff curve that reminded Howard of a New Year's Eve party favor, the kind that makes a farting, honking sound and then unrolls towards the unsuspecting bystander when you blow on it. It had filched one of Howard's loafers. It was picking the shoe up and slamming it petulantly down on the tiles, again and again. From the look of the towels scattered about, Howard guessed the finger had tried to kill several of those before finding the shoe. A weird joy suddenly suffused Howard. It felt as if the inside of his aching, woozy head had been filled with green light. "Here I am, you nitwit!" he yelled. "Come and get me!" The finger popped out of the shoe, rose in a monstrous ripple of joints. Howard could actually hear some of its many knuckles cracking, and floated rapidly through the air toward him. Howard turned on the hedge clippers, and they buzzed into hungry life. So far, so good. The burned, blistered tip of the finger wavered in front of his face, the split nail weaving mystically back and forth. Howard lunged for it. The finger fainted to the left and slipped around his left ear. The pain was amazing. Howard simultaneously felt and heard a grisly ripping sound as the finger tried to tear his ear from the side of his head. He sprang forward, seized the finger in his left fist, and sheared through it. The clippers lugged down as the blades hit the bone, the high buzzing of the motor becoming a rough growl, but it had been built to clip through small, tough branches, and there was really no problem. No problem at all. This was round two. This was double jeopardy, where the scores could really change, and Howard Mitla was racking up a bundle. Blood flew in a fine haze, and then the stump pulled back. Howard blundered after it, the last 10 inches of the finger hanging from his ear like a coat hanger for a moment before dropping off. The finger lunged at him. Howard ducked, and it went over his head. He was blind, of course. That was his advantage. Grabbing his ear like that had just been a lucky shot. He lunged with the clippers, a gesture which looked almost like a fencing thrust, and sheared off another 2 feet of the finger. It thumped to the tiles and lay there, twitching. Now the rest of it was trying to pull back. "No, you don't," Howard panted. "No, you don't. Not at all." He ran for the sink, slipped in a puddle of blood, almost fell, then caught his balance. The finger was blurring back down the drain, knuckle after knuckle, like a freight train going into a tunnel. Howard seized it, tried to hold it, and couldn't. It went sliding through his hand like a greased and burning length of clothesline. He sliced forward again, nevertheless, and managed to cut off the last 3 feet of the thing just above the point where it was whizzing through his fist. He leaned over the sink, holding his breath this time, and stared down into the blackness of the drain. Again, he caught just a glimpse of retreating white. "Come on back any time," Howard Mitla shouted. "Come on back any time at all. I'll be right here waiting for you." He turned around, releasing his breath in a gasp. The room still smelled of drain cleaner. Couldn't have that, not while there was still work to do. There was a wrapped cake of Dial soap behind the hot water tap. Howard picked it up and threw it at the bathroom window. It broke the glass and bounced off the crisscross of mesh behind it. He remembered putting that mesh in, remembered how proud of it he had been. He, Howard Mitla, mild-mannered accountant, had been taking care of the old homestead. Now he knew what taking care of the old homestead was really all about. Had there been a time when he was afraid to go into the bathroom because he thought there might be a mouse in the tub and he would have to beat it to death with a broom handle? He believed so, but that time, and that version of Howard Mitla seemed long ago now. He looked slowly around the bathroom. It was a mess. Pools of blood and two chunks of finger lay on the floor. Another leaned askew in the basin. Fine sprays of blood fanned across the walls and stippled the bathroom mirror. The basin was streaked with it. "All right," Howard sighed. "Clean-up time, boys and girls." He turned the hedge clippers on again and began to saw the various lengths of finger he had cut off into pieces small enough to flush down the toilet. The policeman was young, and he was Irish. O'Banion was his name. By the time he finally arrived at the closed door of the Mitla apartment, several tenants were standing behind him in a little knot. With the exception of Dennis Feeney, who wore an expression of high outrage, they all looked worried. O'Banion knocked on the door, then rapped, and finally hammered. "You better break it down," Mrs. Javier said. "I heard him all the way up on the 7th floor. "The man's insane," Feeney said. "Probably killed his wife." "No," said Mrs. Dattelbaum. "I saw her leave this morning, just like always." "Doesn't mean she didn't come back again, does it?" Mr. Feeney asked truculently, and Mrs. Dattelbaum subsided. "Mr. Mitter?" O'Banion called. "It's Mitla," Mrs. Dattelbaum said, "with an L." "Oh, crap," O'Banion said, and hit the door with his shoulder. It burst open and he went inside, closely followed by Mr. Feeney. "You stay here, sir," O'Banion instructed. "The hell I will," Feeney said. He was looking into the kitchen with its strew of implements on the floor and the splatters of vomit on the kitchen cabinets. His eyes were small and bright and interested. "The guy's my neighbor, and after all, I was the one who made the call." "I don't care if you made the call on your own private hotline to the commish," O'Banion said. "Get the hell out of here. You're going down to the station with this guy Middle." "Mitla," Feeney said, and slunk unwillingly toward the door to the hallway, casting glances back at the kitchen as he went. O'Banion had sent Feeney back mostly because he didn't want Feeney to see how nervous he was. The mess in the kitchen was one thing. The way the place smelled was another. Some sort of chemistry lab stink on top, some other smell underneath. He was afraid the underneath smell might be blood. He glanced behind him to make sure that Feeney had gone back all the way, that he was not lingering in the foyer where the coats were hung, and then he advanced slowly across the living room. When he was beyond the view of the onlookers, he unsnapped the strap across the butt of his pistol and drew it. He went to the kitchen and looked all the way in. Empty. A mess, but empty. And what was that splattered across the cabinets? He wasn't sure, but judging by the smell... A noise from behind him, a little shuffling sound, broke the thought off, and he turned quickly, bringing his gun up. "Mr. Mitla?" There was no answer. But the little shuffling sound came again, from down the hall. That meant the bathroom or the bedroom. Officer O'Banion advanced in that direction, raising his gun and pointing its muzzle at the ceiling. He was now carrying it in much the same way Howard had carried the hedge clippers. The bathroom door was ajar. O'Banion was quite sure this was where the sound had come from, and he knew it was where the worst of the smell was coming from. He crouched, then pushed the door open with the muzzle of his gun. "Oh, my God," he said softly. The bathroom looked like a slaughterhouse after a busy day. Blood sprayed the walls and ceiling in scarlet bouquets of spatter. There were puddles of blood on the floor, and more blood had run down the inside and outside curves of the bathroom basin in thick trails. That was where the worst of it appeared to be. He could see a broken window, a discarded bottle of what appeared to be drain cleaner, which would explain the awful smell in here, and a pair of men's loafers lying quite a distance apart from each other. One of them was quite badly scuffed. And, as the door swung wider, he saw the man. Howard Mitla had crammed himself as far into the space between the bathtub and the wall as he could get when he finished his disposal operation. He held the electric hedge clippers on his lap, but the batteries were flat. Bone was a little tougher than branches after all, it seemed. His hair still stood up in wild spikes. His cheeks and brow were smeared with bright streaks of blood. His eyes were wide, but almost totally empty. It was an expression Officer O'Banion associated with speed freaks and crackheads. "Holy Jesus," he thought. The guy was right. He did kill his wife. He killed somebody, at least. So where's the body? He glanced towards the tub, but couldn't see in. It was the most likely place, but it also seemed to be the one object in the room which wasn't streaked and splattered with gore. "Mr. Mitla?" he asked. He wasn't pointing his gun directly at Howard, but the muzzle was most certainly in the neighborhood. "Yes, that's my name," Howard said in a hollow, courteous voice. "Howard Mitla, CPA, at your service. Did you come to use the toilet? Go right ahead. There's nothing to disturb you now.
I think that problem's been taken care of, at least for the time being. Would you mind getting rid of the weapon, sir? Weapon? Howard looked at him vacantly for a moment, then seemed to understand. These? He raised the hedge clippers, and the muzzle of Officer O'Banion's gun for the first time came to rest on Howard himself. Yes, sir. Sure, Howard said. He tossed the clippers indifferently into the bathtub. There was a clatter as the battery hatch popped out. Doesn't matter. The batteries are flat anyway. But what I said about using the toilet? On more mature consideration, I guess I'd advise against it. You would. Now that the man was disarmed, O'Banion wasn't sure exactly how to proceed. It would have been a lot easier if the victim were on view. He supposed he'd better cuff the guy and then call for backup. All he knew for sure was that he wanted to get out of this smelly, creepy bathroom. Yes, Howard said. After all, consider this, officer. There are five fingers on a hand, just one hand, mind you. And have you ever thought about how many holes to the underworld there are in an ordinary bathroom? Counting the holes in the faucets, that is. I make it seven. Howard paused and then added, seven is a prime, which is to say a number divisible only by one in itself. Would you want to hold out your hands for me, sir? Officer O'Banion said, taking his handcuffs from his belt. Vi says I know all the answers, Howard said, but Vi's wrong. He slowly held out his hands. O'Banion knelt before him and quickly snapped a cuff on Howard's right wrist. Who's Vi? My wife, Howard said. His blank, shining eyes looked directly into Officer O'Banion's. She's never had any problem going to the bathroom while someone else is in the room, you know? She could probably go while you were in the room. Officer O'Banion began to have a terrible yet weirdly plausible idea that this strange little man had killed his wife with a pair of hedge clippers and then somehow dissolved her body with drain cleaner, and all because she wouldn't get the hell out of the bathroom while he was trying to drain the dragon. He snapped the other cuff on. Did you kill your wife, Mr. Mitla? For a moment, Howard looked almost surprised, then he lapsed back into that queer plastic state of apathy again. No, he said. Vi's at Dr. Stone's. They're pulling a complete set of uppers. Vi says it's a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it. Why would I kill Vi? Now that he had the cuffs on the guy, O'Banion felt a little better, a little more in control of the situation. Well, it looks like you off someone. It was just a finger, Howard said. He was still holding his hands out in front of him. Light twinkled and ran along the chain between the handcuffs like liquid silver. But there are more fingers than one on a hand. And what about the hand's owner? Howard's eyes shifted around the bathroom, which had now gone well beyond gloom. It was filling up with shadows again. I told it to come back any time, Howard whispered. But I was hysterical. I've decided I am not capable. It grew, you see. It grew when it hit the air. Something suddenly splashed inside the closed toilet. Howard's eyes shifted in that direction. So did Officer O'Banion's. The splash came again. It sounded as if a trout had jumped in there. No, I most definitely wouldn't use the toilet, Howard said. I'd hold it if I were you, officer. I'd hold it just as long as I possibly could, and then use the alley beside the building. O'Banion shivered. Get a hold of yourself, boyo, he told himself sternly. You get a hold of yourself, or you'll wind up as nutty as this guy. He got up to check the toilet. Bad idea, Howard said. A really bad idea. What exactly happened in here, Mr. Mitla? O'Banion asked. And what have you stored in the toilet? What happened? It was like... Howard trailed off and then began to smile. It was a relieved smile, but his eyes kept creeping back to the closed lid of the toilet. It was like Jeopardy, he said. In fact, it was like Final Jeopardy. The category is the inexplicable. The Final Jeopardy answer is because they can. Do you know what the Final Jeopardy question is, officer? Fascinated, unable to take his eyes from Howard's, Officer O'Banion shook his head. The Final Jeopardy question, Howard said, in a voice that was cracked and roughened from screaming, is, why do terrible things sometimes happen to the nicest people? That's the Final Jeopardy question. It's all going to take a lot of thought. But I have plenty of time, as long as I stay away from the The holes. The splash came again. It was heavier this time. The vomitous toilet seat bumped sharply up and down. Officer O'Banion got up, walked over, and bent down. Howard looked at him with some interest. "Final jeopardy, officer," said Howard Mittler. "How much do you wish to wager?" O'Banion thought about it for a moment, then grasped the toilet seat and wagered it all.